faith, spiritual values, moral issues, government, economy, education, work, responsibility. What we think about these depends on our worldview. Now, VCY America presents Worldview Weekend Radio with Brannon House.
All right, welcome. Glad you guys are with us. And we've got a very special guest in studio today. Aaron is going to join us. Aaron is often joins us on my show on Thursday nights to give live updates from Israel. But he is in studio. He was in studio with us last night. He's in studio with us right now. And so we're going to have Aaron with us the whole hour and take some of your calls, talk about Israel, talk about the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, many things going on. And we'll touch on the red heifers, the temple again, and we'll see where it goes, plus your calls. By the way, we got some big news today. It's okay if I announce this, right, Justin?
Yep.
Big news today. VCY is now on the air in New York City. New York City? Remember that? You remember that commercial, right, Logan? For the paste? What is it? The nacho sauce or whatever? What do you call that? What do you call that stuff you dip your chips in? The salsa.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're on the air now in New York City as of yesterday. Let's see what we got here. So Manhattan gets a strong signal. So we're covering Manhattan right now, Justin?
Yep.
Wow. Wow. So right now the United Nations can hear everything we're doing.
I guess so.
Wow. Well, I mean, they could have heard us before going online, right? But there you go. All right, so that's pretty good. New York City, Manhattan, New York City, welcome to the VCY America family. You guys hear me talk about VCY, those of you listening on Frank Speech. I know we got a station in Montana that's picking up our feed as well outside of VCY. So to all of you that are looking for good Christian radio, I keep telling you, VCYAmerica.org. They got an app, they got a Roku channel, and now they got a big footprint there in Manhattan. There you go. And I bet it grows. I bet it grows. All right. Well, welcome aboard, everybody. Glad you're here. All right. Joining me now is Aaron. Aaron, thanks for being with us.
Pleasure. Good
Come
to
on
be
into
you.
That mic a little closer, if you don't mind. And let's talk about some of the things going on in Israel real quick. We touched on some of them last night, so we're not going to plow a lot of ground because I want to cover new information and then take some phone calls today as well. But give our audience an update of what is the biggest concern right now in Israel.
The biggest concern now, of course, is Iran. It's been going on a number of years. The threat of them going nuclear, they say that they're building nuclear energy for good purposes, for energy purposes. We all know that what their end goal is, they want it to have explosives. The word out is that they have actually passed the threshold where they can actually do it now. Mm-hmm. But that is not stopping our Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. Before he came to power a month ago, he said, my two major priorities when I take over the office, number one is including Saudi Arabia in the Abraham Peace Accords, and number two, dealing with Iran. Just last week, Brennan, our military sent over a few drones. Two of them were taken out. One penetrated inside. Didn't do a lot of damage. And I actually think it could have been more psychological work rather than military. Otherwise, you know, why did we only send three small drones?
Mm-hmm.
It could also be sending a message to here, the United States, to the United States government, that we are moving ahead on this. We're not going to sit idle. We're not going to be latent about it, because the problem is we can talk about it. We know what Iran are doing. They're not talking about it. They're doing it. They're building. The question is are we going to just sit and talk about it, or are we going to do something about it? And it looks like our military are stepping up. And let's see where it goes from here. But it's not an issue that we can afford to play games with. The same thing happened in 1982 with Iraq. Iraq were building a nuclear installation plant, and our jets flew over Jordan. They actually flew lower than the radars so that the radars couldn't pick us up. We flew right over Jordan and we bombed and we took out the Osaka military installation, nuclear installation in Iraq, of course. When we did that, at the time, the world were infuriated with us. They were angry with us. You know, we're starting something. Right. But thank God we did it, because by 1991, the Gulf War, if they had nuclear weapons, it would have been it would be a very different world today, I believe. So we did it.
Wow, good for you guys. All right, so let's talk about this. This is an article that was in the New York Post the other day, written by my friend Todd Binsman, who's a regular guest on the show. And if you guys want to show this, you don't have it? Let me see if I can get you to show my computer. There we go. I don't think I had it all the way plugged in. We showed this the other night. We're like, well, how do we know that's a real passport? You know, I mean, it says right there on it, Islamic Republic of Iran passport. But we're like, how do we know that they didn't give him a fake passport so that his name doesn't pop up on the terror list, right? And so initially it was like, he's on the terror list. Then it came, oh, he's not on the terror list. And now we have an update from Town Hall. I mentioned this last night, but I'll bring our listeners up to speed here on radio. Fox News updated its reporting on Wednesday to say that a Department of Homeland Security official told the network that the Iranian illegal immigrant captured in the human smuggling bust was determined not to be a match with the FBI's terror watch list. A partial contraction of the FBI's earlier refusal, or a contradiction of the FBI's earlier refusal to confirm anyone's status on the watch list, and despite the name and date of birth reportedly being initially flagged as a match. So we're still a little iffy on this. Not that I would trust the FBI, which is a very corrupt organization now, and in partnership with a lot of Islamists, by the way, giving the top FBI director's award under Director Comey and under Director Mueller, the top FBI director's award to known Islamic jihadist or civilization jihadist. So again, I wouldn't trust the FBI. But my question to you is, as Todd has said on our show last week, who wrote this article for the New York Post, this guy could just walk across the border like everybody else and say, hi, I'm here, and I want my bus ticket or airplane and hotel and food, and he could go and wait for his court date, of which most of them aren't showing up for. We got a new report on that today. And he could walk in just like everybody else, but he was being smuggled, which tells us he doesn't want to be discovered. He doesn't want to be found. He has some nefarious agenda, right? We already know from federal trials that Islamic Revolutionary Guard has terror cells here. Hamas has terror cells here. Hezbollah has terror cells here. What do you believe is the threat to America? As an Israeli, what do you believe is the threat to America when Israel goes against Iran? What will be the threat to America? Because we're the ones supposedly now rehearsing with you guys, U.S. military and Israeli military, on striking Iran. Explain to the American people listening right now,
well,
what you believe is the threat from terror cells that are already here.
So firstly, I'm sure you know this. In the Middle East, we are called the little Satan, but you are called the big Satan. And it's not America per se. It's democracy. It's the free world. Islam, you know, they have an agenda. And the word Islam, from the word Muslim, it means surrender, submit. And really the goal is that every person and every piece of land is submitted, surrendered to their cause, to their God, Allah, to their prophet, Muhammad. That's why when they take over land, they build a mosque with a very high elevated steeple at the top. That's why Ground Zero, when after they bombed it, why did they want to build a mosque right at Ground Zero? Because it had a nice fountain, nice...
conquest.
It was conquest. It was symbolic. By the way, sometime later when they wanted to build the mosque there, the mayor of New York, Michael Bloomberg, who's very Jewish, he was actually all for it. So I think the bottom line why they want to... The big threat is Islam. And, you know, they don't agree with our democratic modern world. Some of the moderate leaders in Islam do, like Saudi Arabia, believe it or not. Some of the nations making peace with Israel. But bottom line, it's the whole ethos and civilization of Islam. And I think a lot of people in the free world, see, what happens is a lot of Muslims, most Muslims, the majority of Muslims, are loving, good, tolerant people. And I'll say that publicly wherever they are, the majority. The problem is the small minority who have the money, who have the power, who have the weapons, they rule over the majority. That's the problem. The majority, they may be loving, they may be kind, but at the end of the day, I don't know which side they would choose. And I'm not going to give my opinion, but I'm pretty sure I know where they would choose. So the free world is a direct threat to Islam. In 1977, 78, when the Shah of Iran was overthrown and the Ayatollah Khomeini came to power, that's what he said. He said, America, Israel, they've been, Allah has allowed them to rise up to be a thorn in our flesh to drive out the complacency. So the Islamic revolution is still snowballing. It's still moving. And I think Americans, they need to educate themselves, even if it's a half an hour or an hour, a little clip about what the real heart of Islam is. And we need to pray for them. We need to pray that they would be more accepting of others, and that they would come to know that one of their prophets, Jesus, is more than just a prophet, that he is truly the Son of the living God. And that's an issue. They don't believe that. So number one, I think Americans need to be educated. You don't need to dig deep in the books, but you need to know at least a little bit about what their goals are and to be prepared for it, and to see the clash in civilization. Islam is more than just a religion. It's a whole civilization, and I'm sure most of our viewers know all about what the Sharia laws are and the mm-hmm. whole caliphate and everything. That's what their goals are. Go to places like Dearborn, Michigan. Go to Minneapolis, yeah, Minnesota, where you're from.
Yeah, exactly.
And they are two real key strongholds in America. But if you don't go to those places, go to Europe, go to France, go to England, go to Sweden, go to Germany. Islam is taking over these places.
Yeah. Just one correction. I lived in Minneapolis, St. Paul, but I'm not from there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Big correction.
I am from the Mid-South. I was born in Jackson. So anyway, I like my Southern heritage. Okay. I live there, but I am not from there. Okay.
Fair enough.
It's a Southern thing.
No, I understand it. It's like when I get accused of being Australian. I love Australia. My parents lived there for 40 years.
Right.
But I'm from New Zealand.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we come back. Here's a headline. European Union names this lady here as the new chief. Marion Lalisse, however you say her name, as new chief for tackling anti-Muslim hatred. And what is this about? Islamophobia. So a lot of what we just said in the European Union, they want to outlaw what we just talked about. They want to do that with blasphemy laws as well. They're trying to crack down on freedom of speech. In my news report tonight, I got another one where they're working hard to make it illegal to talk about the truth on LGBTQ. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Glad you're with us. Logan, can you put me in that thing right there? Welcome back. Glad you are with us. Worldview Radio, our website, worldviewradio.com. Joining me in studio is Aaron. Aaron, pronounce your last name for our audience, please.
Lavaco.
Lavaco.
Lavaco. Used to be, many generations ago, Levi from the tribe of Levi.
That'd be a lot easier.
Yeah, it would be. Then they changed it to Levaski when we moved around Eastern Europe, Lithuania, Poland, Belarusia. Then they changed it to Levakov, and then they moved to England, changed it to Lavaco. My mother, her maiden name also is Levi. So we believe we're from the tribe of Levi, or as I say to my friends, I know I'm from the tribe of Levi because it's in my genes.
Yes. So you literally, you are, I guess, your kids could be a part of the Levites being trained for the temple if they wanted to, right?
Well, I if they wanted to, anything's possible. But no, actually, the people that have been chosen to do that job, when we're talking about the future rebuilt temple, no, they have actually, from the day of their birth, have been set apart,
really?
Set aside, protected from blemishes from the world. They have been trained up right from infancy to do the priesthood, to do the sacrifices, to understand all about the instruments and everything.
Okay, so what year did that start? You know what year that started?
I don't know the exact age, but my understanding, we're talking about within the last 20 years.
Okay, and so how do those young people, males?
They are all males.
How do those males interact and move about in Israel? What do they do?
So my understanding, which is very limited, is that they were chosen from families from the Levitical lineage.
Mm-hmm.
And they were obviously the Sanhedrin, who are the Jewish rabbinic authority. They go along to certain families. There's some kind of an agreement. Mm. And the families agree, and they kind of like in the Bible, where Hannah, she dedicates her child Samuel to the Lord. He became a priest in the temple of the Lord. But she dedicated him. Because she was barren. She couldn't have children. She said, God, you give me a child and I'll dedicate him to you. And the Lord heard her. That's what the name Shmuel, Samuel, means. Heard from God. And so she dedicates him to the Lord. And this is what people do.
Mm, wow. Now, let's talk about this real quick. Yarmulke?
This has two names.
Okay.
This is one name is Yarmulke, which is a Yiddish word.
Mm-hmm.
And the other name, the more common name, is a kippah or kippah.
Mm-hmm.
And the word kippah is from the word kippur, which is like Yom Kippur, covering, the day of covering. But yarmulke is a Yiddish word, and it's the same meaning. It's a covering. We Jewish people, especially observant Jews, they wear it on their head. All kinds of colors and shapes.
And you brought me this from Israel?
And I brought this to you from Israel.
You didn't buy it at a store here in the U.S.?
No, I didn't.
You brought it all the way from Israel.
In fact, if you look under it, there might be no, because sometimes it has a little tag, made in Israel. That is made in Israel.
Okay.
So that's a top quality yarmulke.
And we got the Star of David on the top.
The Star of David on top, the blue and white, the colors of Israel.
Beautiful.
Yep.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
He brought me that last night. I had it on a shelf in my office, but I thought I'd bring it up here and show folks. Now, why do they wear it? What does it symbolize? It symbolizes what? Submission, respect?
Mainly respect. It's a reminder that we are down here, and there is a superpower, God, our God, up in the heavens. So it's just a reminder that we are under his authority. So that's why it doesn't really matter what color or shape or size. It's a reminder to respect him, to honor him.
Now, I put this on last night, but it wasn't staying on. So I'm assuming that most people must use a bobby pin or something to help keep it on?
Yeah, they do. They wear a little hair clip, fits on.
Uh-huh.
And apparently if you're bald, there's something that's got a sticky side to it that sticks on your head.
Oh,
yeah.
All right. So when would they wear this? Only when they go to synagogue or when?
So if you're an observant Jew, you wear it pretty much everywhere all the time.
Okay.
You know, if you go to bed or you go for a swim, you take it off. I know some people that are not observant, they will go to a bar mitzvah, a wedding, and they will have forgotten to bring one. And they'll look around, and if there's a spare one, they'll use it. If there's nothing spare, they'll use anything. They'll use a handkerchief. Or they'll sometimes, if there's absolutely nothing, they'll stand there with their hand over their head like that.
Wow.
So again, it's just an outward sign of respect.
But those who maybe who wouldn't wear it all the time would certainly wear it when they went into like church service or to the
synagogue.
Synagogue. When I say church service, I'm talking about some of my Messianic Jewish friends who I see wearing them when they're leading worship or singing at the piano and singing and leading worship, but they don't wear them all the time.
Exactly. I don't wear them all the time. Benjamin Netanyahu doesn't wear them all the time. But when he's with Orthodox Jews, when he goes to bar mitzvahs, weddings, funerals, you'll always see him with a yarmulke.
Wow. All right, let's move on and talk about something else going on in the Middle East. We've played videos on this, but it's been a while, and you brought it back up last night. I find it very, very interesting. And that is Naum. Is that how you say this?
Naum. It's a Latin word, and it means new future. Naum.
And this is being built in Saudi Arabia, right?
Correct. Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia at the moment are being controlled basically by Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince. Apparently, the ones that are in control have dementia. So he runs the show there. He's a more moderate Muslim, and he has a vision. And it's a vision called 2030,
mm-hmm.
and the name...
Which is kind of interesting, because I was mentioning... You asked me if I was aware of it. I'm like, yeah, 2030. It's Agenda 2030, Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, United
right.
Nations Sustainable Development, World Government. And you're like, no, something completely
yeah,
different.
Yeah, no, this
And
is
I didn't know what you were talking about until you said Naum. And then I'm like, oh, wait a minute, the kind of transhumanist, technocrat city they're trying to build in Saudi Arabia.
Basically, in short, it's... Mohammed bin Salman has a vision. By 2030, which is only 7 years away, he wants to build a city twice the size of New York in the desert there. He wants this city to, and as I mentioned, he's a more moderate Muslim. So he's going to include women, which is a pretty radical move.
He's the one that said they could get education and start driving.
Absolutely.
He's trying to moderate himself on the world stage.
Yeah. By the way, he's the guy that Donald Trump, he said, we have our man in Saudi Arabia. What he said about Mohammed bin Salman. He wants to have more robots than humans. He wants to have high technology, very high quality air, water, all of that. Now, what I've studied about it, the EU are behind it, the United Nations are behind it, China behind it.
Tesla?
Russia are behind it. Can't remember, but I'm pretty sure Tesla as well.
I think I just saw a video on it. The major corporations are getting behind it.
Yeah, Jordan and Egypt, who are the neighbors of Saudi Arabia. And here's the really interesting spin. They want Israel to be a part of it.
And of course, one reason they do is because of the technology that Israel has, right?
This is the main reason. The main reason. Israel are one of the leaders in the world in prosthetics. And of course, if they want more robots than humans, there you go, number one. Number two, they want to build a train all the way from Riyadh to Tel Aviv, probably along the King's Highway, the ancient trade route. They want Israel specialists in water. They can turn air into water.
Israel can.
Then there's something called flying cars. I don't know if you've heard about that.
Well, I know they've been talking about them. Of course, we've all been wanting them since we were kids watching the Jetsons. But I know that they've been working on flying cars here in the U.S., and I've seen some of the prototypes and the wings, come in when you get on the ground and you put them out and take off.
Israel has a flying car, but let me clarify. We all know what a drone is.
Right.
It's a machine with four propellers.
Right.
So this drone that they have built, it's basically a massive-sized drone. It's a car, but it's a massive-sized drone, meaning it's a vehicle that you can sit in, but it has four massive propellers. But we're advancing. That's where we're heading, to flying cars. So that's what Saudi Arabia wants as well. And let's see what happens. Mohammed bin Salman has tried in the past other building projects that haven't succeeded. This is a very ambitious one. His budget toward the beginning was, he set aside $500 billion, and that's now doubled to $1 trillion. One of his main goals, Brandon, is the Persian Gulf, which basically he will be in charge of there. It will control approximately 9% of the world's trade.
Wow.
So let's see who gets involved, who gets on board. And the other thing that I mentioned earlier when you asked me about what's one of the major issues facing Israel, I talked about Iran, but the other major issue is that Benjamin Netanyahu wants to bring Saudi Arabia into the Abraham peace accords.
That, he said if he can do that, that will open up all kinds of other options for other countries.
Absolutely. He said that, Saudi Arabia are my priority. And for your information and for the viewers' information, in the last 2 weeks, we've had two more nations that have joined in the peace talks, two Muslim nations. We're talking about Chad in Africa, and we're talking about Sudan. Sudan are almost 100% Islamic nation.
Wow.
And they are wanting to make peace with Israel. So actually, that's not accurate as far as Chad. Chad have moved their embassy to Israel. They haven't quite made peace yet, and Sudan are talking about moving their embassy. So, these Abraham Accords, not everyone is for them, but they were implemented under the Donald Trump regime.
Yes.
And Benjamin Netanyahu regime, and we've got about 8 Muslim nations that have peace now with Israel, which is very radical for a Muslim nation to make peace with Israel, because in 1967, and this is a really important historical event to know, in Sudan, the capital of Sudan is Khartoum. After Israel took over the Temple Mount and the West Bank, which we call Judea and Samaria, that's our ancient names, but after we took that land over, as well as the Golan Heights, something was born called the Arab League. And the first meeting was in Khartoum, Sudan. And these hundreds of millions of Muslim nations that were represented by their leaders, they left that first Arab League conference with 3 declarations. And they're the infamous 3 no's, N-O. No peace with Israel, no negotiations with Israel, and no recognition of Israel. So if you go to all of these nations that are represented at the Arab League, you go into their geography classes in their schools, you won't see Israel on the map. Israel doesn't exist to these nations, but that's changed. It changed by the first nation, Egypt, under the leadership of Anwar Sadat, after the Yom Kippur War.
Is that why partly he was murdered, you believe?
That was totally why he was murdered.
And many of our audience is probably too young to remember the footage of the folks jumping off of the military vehicles during a parade and assassinating
right.
him. But I remember that day clear as a bell. Much of our audience is old enough to remember, but some of them that day.
That's because Anwar Sadat went out of the Arab League.
Mm-hmm.
He went against those 3 no's. No peace, no negotiations, and no recognition of Israel.
And he'd been going to Camp David working with Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter and Menachem Begin. And he signed. He said, enough bloodshed. And until this day, we love Anwar Sadat. And we still have peace with Egypt.
Hold it right there. We're going to go to a hard break, come back. Egypt, by the way, folks, well, it looks like they're going to be added to the BRICS banking system. And Saudi Arabia. How does this impact Israel? Stay tuned. All right, welcome back. Glad you are with us. Check out this headline here, Aaron. BRICS, that's Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, banking system I've been talking about since 2010. Now it's pretty much on the news constantly. BRICS to expand soon. Saudi Arabia keen to join. Let's see. I think we got another one here. Egypt's Economic Times. Egypt's parliament endorses pact to join BRICS bank. So isn't that interesting that this is now developing, particularly the new latest one is Egypt, because I think I could see a way where Saudi Arabia could say to Benjamin Netanyahu, we really need you to join the BRICS banking system. And if he's so set on setting himself in world history, which I think he is, then he might just turn you guys into being a partner of the BRICS banking system. Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Argentina, some of these groups that, you know, are now being added, which means they're going to dump the petrodollar once Saudi Arabia, you know, fully is on board. They're going to get rid of that, which was set up by Nixon. And the dollar, the U.S. dollar comes crashing. We're done. We're toast. So Israel, interesting enough, could say, excuse me, Israel could say, you know what? We're not getting the backing we need from the United States. And we're trying to make peace over here. And we live in a pretty rough neighborhood. And I'm sorry, U.S., but we're going to join them and dump your dollar and go along with it. I could see this happening.
Well, you know, when it comes to nations' economies, people will, you know, they'll try to make sure that if you're a leader, you want to make sure that your people feel secure.
Well, at the end of the day, Israel's going to do what's best for Israel.
That's right.
Even if it means to the detriment of America, right?
Well, absolutely. Especially if we see that America are...
abandoning you.
Are abandoning us. And we've seen some cracks in the relationship in the last 15 or 20 years with Barack Obama, with even a little bit so far with Joe Biden, even though he really has been a friend to Israel. But sometimes we question, on one hand, he does things to support Israel, but then on the other hand, he's writing checks, giving money to Iran, putting, you know, or lifting the sanctions on Iran. But Benjamin Netanyahu, as I mentioned...
So publicly he supports Israel, but behind your back he's stabbing you.
Well, it's not even behind our back. He doesn't even hide it.
That's true.
You know?
But can you imagine what he's doing behind your back
well,
that you don't know about?
Right.
I can tell you right now.
What we don't know about. That's right.
I can tell you. But it's not good what's not being reported.
Right. But, you know...
Because he's got people in his administration that are, you know...
Right. That's right. He may not be calling the shots. There might
no,
be others.
No, he's not calling the shots.
And but let me just add that a lot of people may not know this. A lot of people know, especially in America... What a great orator, what a great speaker Benjamin Netanyahu is. What a great leader. But what they don't necessarily know is that his real strength is in economics and finance. He used to be our finance minister. He took us through the recessions. He took us through COVID. He's quite a genius when it comes to money. So if he sees this is going to be good for the Israeli economy, and if we're trading with Saudi Arabia, our prosthetics, our water, our... solar energy, whatever it is, he'll do what's best for his people, as you said.
So I want to get back real quick before we go to a video of this Neom city being built in Saudi Arabia. I want to go back real quick to your technology. Taking the air and making water. Taking salt water, making it, you know, available to use for your irrigation. Of course, the UN didn't want you guys to be a nation in 1948. They said you can't sustain life. Now you're harvesting, what, up to six crops a season over there?
Listen, I think if you go back 2,000, 3,000 years and you opened up your Bible and you saw the story here in our 21st century, what has happened from 1948 to 2021, it's like another miraculous biblical story. You go back to 1948 when David Ben-Gurion declared independence. We had no water. Mm-hmm. It was very swampy, malaria-infested water. We had no military, we had no education system, hospital system, healthcare, all of that. And where we've come today and with high tech, I actually believe that we are coming into our true calling as a people. We've come from 1948 being a nation of victims, because that first generation, they're all Holocaust survivors, Brandon.
Right.
500,000 new immigrants. They're all coming from the gas chambers of Europe. But we've grown out of that. We've shaken off that victim mentality. We've moved on. We've built a nation. We've become strong. And now we are moving into what I really believe is the fulfillment of our calling. And our, what was our original calling? To be a light to the nations. So we're developing solar energy. We're developing nuclear energy. We're developing, we've got gas. We've got, and as you mentioned, we are now turning by reverse osmosis salt water into fresh water. And that means that we are no longer dependent on rain. We are self-sufficient for water. This is a miracle. It's a water revolution. We even provide Jordan with a quota of water every year. That's part of the 1994 peace deal that we made with the late King Hussein of Jordan.
So are you telling me you have technology in Israel that a lot of the Arab nations don't have?
Absolutely. And this is one of the two main reasons why a lot of these Muslim nations are making peace with Israel.
They want you to share the technology.
They absolutely. Bottom line, that's it. They look at themselves, and in a lot of these Muslim nations, they're a mess. They fight among each other. They've got tribal wars. They've got religious wars, Sunnis, Shiites. They look at Israel, this small little nation the size of New Jersey or Wales in the UK, and they see what we've been able to do, and they can't understand it. They've got the money from the oil. They can't do it. So they realize, rather than fight against us, let's reach out. And they've reached out to us, and it's going to be a win-win situation, at least in the foreseeable future.
Where are you at? We know you guys are just abundant with natural gas. I mean, like, so much natural gas, you're going to be exporters if you haven't already started. Where are you at with actual oil?
So what I've studied about our situation with oil, up on the Golan Heights, we are actually pumping water. We found a source. It's not a huge amount. I don't know how to gauge what is a lot, what is medium, what is huge. From what I understand, it's a very small amount.
Of oil.
Of oil. But what I've heard, and I've read reports, there's an area in Israel called the Shvela, which means the lowlands. That's between Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. It's an area called Beit Shemesh, the area where the Philistines were, where the Israelites were, where Samson came from. Actually, that's the main area where Samson the judge fought, where he fought the Philistines. And we've got an incredible amount of archaeological discoveries there. Now, in that land, it's been reported under the ground, but very, very deep under the ground, Israel has the same quantity of oil that Saudi Arabia has.
Wow.
But no one has been able to step up or finance or say we want to do it. You know, there's the as I said, it's very deep, number one. Number two, the financial commitment. And number three, I'm sure you have the same here.
Environmentalists.
The environmentalists.
I knew that was coming.
Because it's in a beautiful area right. with lots of nature and lots of trees.
Right. Yeah, well. Let's talk also real quick about gold. I've been reading reports that you may have some mountains or the mountains of Solomon or some other mountains that may be full of gold in Israel. What are you hearing?
So that I haven't heard much of. I've heard little questions.
Okay.
Questions. What we do know is down in the south, near our southern border, Eilat, the Gulf of Aqaba, you go about a half an hour north, and there's an ancient area called Timna. And it's actually a nature park, Timna Park. And in the 1950s, not long after the State of Israel was born, we found hundreds and hundreds of copper mines. Not gold, but copper. And back in those days, copper was very expensive. So we opened up these, and by the way, these copper mines were dated from Solomon's period.
Mm-hmm.
So they're called Solomon's mines. So the state of Israel, they opened up the mines and started to continue to extract and export.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, copper was very expensive. But then there was a massive dip in copper, so they closed the mines. But apparently copper is very expensive on the market these days. So they're actually talking about opening those copper mines up again. But gold, not a huge amount. There we go.
Now look, show this article. I just put this in a search engine. This is the article I've read before.
So this is the same area that I was talking about.
Gold rush in the mountains of
Eilat.
So there you go. And this is the article I've been reading about, and one of a few though. And they think they've got, you know, gold.
Well, that man in that article, he's the ex-chief of the Mossad, and he probably has a few key people speaking in his ear.
This is 2012. The article's a little old, but...
Okay, yeah, that is a bit old. Like I said, I haven't heard a lot about that, and I'm sure if that was snowballing, we would hear a lot more about it.
The reason we're, of course, talking about this, here we go. Here's another one that's 2019. Let's see if it'll pop up. The rush is on. Mining company hopes to strike gold. There you go. So this is 2019.
So by the sounds of it, they're investigating, searching.
Yeah. They're trying to, I think, if I remember reading the articles correctly, they're trying to raise the money for it.
Interesting. Well, that shouldn't be a problem if there's substantial evidence. Because, look, Israel, who knows what is untapped.
You just said, it's right here. The area is the site of the world's first copper mine, which dates back to ancient imperial Egypt.
Exactly. Wouldn't it be incredible? Because, you know, Brandon, often a lot of people talk to me about Ezekiel chapters 37.
The treasure, where they're invaded for their treasure.
And 39.
Yeah.
Chapter 37 talks about the Valley of Dead Bones coming alive. And I see that happening today with the dead bones coming back to their land. And they're coming alive and they're rising up. But chapters 38 and 39, the War of Gog and Magog, talks about the nations from the north will come and take the spoils. Will it be water?
That's exactly
will
right.
it be natural gas?
That's right.
Because the war now with Ukraine and Russia has totally turned everything around, because Russia no longer supply Europe gas.
Right.
Or maybe it could be this gold, or maybe it could be oil.
And that's why I was going down this road with you. I was trying to figure out what treasures you have. And that's exactly where
I was
going. Who
knows? This could be biblical prophecy being unfolded right before our eyes.
Yeah.
Totally.
All right, before we open the phone lines. In fact, let me give out the number. Thoughts, comments, questions, 1-800-347-9829. 1-800-347-9829. Give your website, too, by the way.
My website, ladies and gentlemen, is lighttothenationsministry.com. And we are a ministry based in Israel, based on... bringing God's word to the nations, bringing light to the nations. It says in the prophet Isaiah, the word of the Lord will go forth from Zion, and the Torah, the law, from Jerusalem. And I want to, as the director of Light of the Nations, bring good, accurate, descriptive updates on what's going on. There's a lot of fake, false news out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to try and combine it with God's prophetic word, because we're coming into days, especially with the talk of the rebuilding of the temple, the return of the Jewish people back to their homeland. These are key signs that we're seeing. So
indeed,
it's lighttothenationsministry.com.
So if they want a tour of Israel, you'll be a
also,
tour guide.
Also, I'm a fully licensed Israeli tour guide. If you'd like to come to the Holy Land, we can help you with that. Whether you're an individual, whether you're a couple, whether you're a family, whether you're a church,
mm-hmm.
whether you're a synagogue, if you're Jewish and you're watching this.
And really, recently you were on a tour and you were had a gal that came up to you, and I hadn't talked to her since high school. She was one of my high school friends.
Absolutely. And I was able to connect you
both
together.
Yeah, we were able to connect after years.
That
we'll be right back.
That was a lot of fun.
Glad you're with us. Let's go real quick to this video, and then we'll go to the calls. This is the calls. This is about Neom. Watch this and listen to this. Here we go.
For too long, humanity has existed within dysfunctional and polluted cities that ignore nature. Now, a revolution in civilization is taking place. Imagine a traditional city and consolidating its footprint, designing to protect and enhance nature. The line will be home to 9 million residents and will be built with a footprint of just 34 square kilometers. And we are designing it to provide a healthier, more sustainable quality of life. The line's communities are organized in three dimensions. Residents have access to all their daily needs within 5-minute walk neighborhoods. And the line's infrastructure makes it possible to travel end to end in 20 minutes with no need for cars, resulting in zero carbon emissions. By leveraging AI technology, services are autonomous, saving you time and effort. Designed by world-leading architects, the line is 500 meters tall, 200 meters wide, 170 kilometers long, and housed within an elegant mirror glass facade. Intelligent solutions create efficiency and year-round temperate microclimate with natural ventilation. Energy and water supplies are 100% renewable. The line is designed as a series of unique communities, offering a wealth of amenities.
Wow. For the sake of time, we're going to stop it there. But this is very much like the 15-minute cities the World Economic Forum is promoting as well. But again, getting everybody off the land and having a very, very small footprint, you know.
Yes.
And everybody's going to be very, very controlled. I mean, it's...
Yeah, it comes across like, oh, you're going to be happy. Right. Everything's gonna... But what you don't see behind the scenes are what's called in the Islamic world, the caliphs, the sheikhs, the authorities, the laws, mm-hmm. and evil mankind, the evil nature of mankind behind it. That's the reality. This is just I think this is in many ways a deception.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to line four. Dick from Maryland. We always love it when Dick calls in. He's so informed. Welcome aboard, my friend.
Well, you two guys are incredible. Thank you so much. Listen, how about we talk about MBS? This is an incredible city he wants to build. He's growing leadership in the world as well as in the Islamic family. But he's got a deal going with China, and China's got a deal going with Iran. Saudi Arabia wants to be protected from China. I'm sure they will join BRICS, but only if China protects them from Iran, and China is powerful enough to do that. Netanyahu is a genius. And he will see that. I think Netanyahu will join BRICS if and only if China protects Israel from Iran. And I guess that's my question for you guys, just to give us feedback.
Very good question.
It's a great question. You know, when the war started between Ukraine and Russia, and this kind of storm started to arise, I don't think the dust has settled by any means.
No.
And I think...
We're shipping tanks. We're shipping airplanes.
Yeah.
We're shipping, looks like, longer range missiles today being reported. This is heating up. They want to go to war.
And there's all kinds of different confederations and agreements.
By the way, they're trying to put Israel in the middle of it. You know, Secretary of State, Blinken's come out and basically told Israel, you need to back up Ukraine and give them whatever they want. And I'm like, don't fall for this, Israel. They are trying to put you in between... They're trying to put you in between... Ukraine and Russia. Don't fall for it.
It's a very fine line, a thin line or thin ice that Netanyahu is going to be walking on, because he even was asked to be a mediator between Russia and Ukraine. But that's right. That Zelensky is going to ask Israel to provide weapons and to support.
And we've provided so many weapons. Again, numerous reports coming out. We have provided so many weapons. We don't have what we need if China decides to go to war. And we just heard from a colonel yesterday who served on the National Security Council for two presidents that what you just saw with that balloon, Chinese balloon across America, is the kind of thing you do when war is imminent. And we don't have what we need because we're giving too much to Ukraine by this CCP-captured president who's giving away our treasure and destroying our economy and our fighting troops, which is, of course, going to then allow us to be beat like a dog by China and Russia. It's a total setup, collapsing us from within. CCP captured White House, collapsing us from within for their masters that have paid them. Let's go to Mary from Denver, Colorado, line 3. Mary, thanks for calling in.
I appreciate your show so much. I tell everybody I can about FrankSpeech.com.
Thank you.
Okay, and I urge everybody else too. I was in Israel 2 weeks before the plandemic, okay, and OPA started. So what I noticed when we were at the Knesset was that the people, I mean, the tour guide who looked like he could have been one of the representatives for Israel, you know, they are so intelligent. Anyway, so basically I asked the question, because you give so much, you're cooperating so much with the Muslims, what's going to happen to Israel, the state? And he said, well, maybe when you return, it's not going to look the way it does now. So my concern is that as Aaron talks about this this cooperation, and the Quran is the Quran for Islam.
Yes.
And so how can you not give all your goodies, kind of like, I don't know, Hezekiah kind of made some mistakes by trusting the wrong people, and then they took him out, essentially. So I'm just, my concern, I'd just like to have you address that the danger you face when you give all your best to the other side, and this is the United Nations, you know, this city project in, is it Saudi Arabia, this city you just showed on?
Yes, that's Saudi Arabia, absolutely.
Yes, because anyway, so I saw that before. So, I know somebody who's working on the water project from America, giving Saudi Arabia all of our best to establish the water. Availability. I mean, to coordinate with all the, you know, the effort that will have to be done. But anyway, I just don't want us to be duped and go along and just, you know, because we are the pigs, you know,
to be destroyed. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, very good call and very good comment. And the music's going to play for us to end. But you know, Israel did this with the Temple Mount. They thought, well, we'll make peace and we'll let them have custody of the Temple Mount. Bad idea.
Right. Bad idea. And our previous government. What was her name? Mary?
Yeah.
Mary, our previous government, they included an Arab party for the first time in the history of the state of Israel in the coalition. And I'm not going to say it was a mistake, but I agree with you. It was a risk, and we almost sold our soul. In fact, to a small part, we did. However, we have a new government now. And our government is very, very right-wing.
Yes,
there's
indeed.
There's no way...
Give your website real quick.
They're going to do that again. My website, ladies and gentlemen, www.lighttothenationsministry.com.
Thank you, folks. Take care.
This Shalom. Has been Worldview Weekend Radio with Brannon House. CDs are available by calling 1-800-729-9829. Or to hear an MP3 file of this or earlier programs, go to worldviewweekend.com. Views expressed may or may not be those of Worldview Weekend, BCY America, or this station. This program is a public affairs presentation of worldviewweekend.com and is heard weekdays on BCY America.